Welcome to episode number 169, the Inside Run podcast, coming to you a bit late this week, but it's for good reasons because we're waiting for Zatopek to finish. This episode is sponsored and brought to you by Solution, the new faster clinically trialed treatment for shin splints, designed by athletes for athletes and clinically trialed by medical doctors. The Solution is trusted by leaders in sports and medicine and worn by Olympic medalists and professional athletes here in Australia. Being diagnosed with shin splints? Feel the difference in 30 days or get your money back. Visit solution.com/inside running. That's solution.com/inside running for more information. Enjoy the episode. Episode number 169 of the Inside Running podcast, Thursday, January 28th, coming to you late this week. We're waiting for Zatopek to finish, had our watch party on Tuesday night, and now we're bringing you the weekly show. Big show, so much to talk about, so much runner news, joined with by always the same two fellas, Bradley Croker up in Canberra. How are you going?
Good, Brady. It's a bit different tonight. I enjoyed seeing your face for a couple of hours on Tuesday.
Yeah, it was good. We were just talking about it a bit off air. It was good to see your face. We weren't sure how we were going to do that for 2 hours, but we managed to pull it off at the end. And now we're here 48 hours later talking about it again.
Yeah, thanks to all those people that tuned in as well. Really appreciate it.
See, the video's up to 31,000 views, Brad.
Really?
I don't know how.
It's got to be some mayo on that.
There's a lot of mayo. I think it's just
people tuning in to see Croker's hair after all the memes that just got made.
Also, welcome to the show down in Anglesey. He was a man on the ground. He was there in person. The coach of Ali Pashley cheering her on as she went around 25 times. Julian Spence, welcome to this week's show.
Thank you. I didn't offer you guys much, sorry. And when you did get me on, I was pretty confused as to what I was supposed to do. So I didn't think I was on the camera, so when I was holding it up to my ear, it might have looked a little strange.
That was gold. All we see is Moose's ear.
He gave us enough. He gave us a weather update, I reckon. We got to hear your voice. It was good.
I couldn't hear you.
Yeah, I don't think you took any headphones, did you?
No, no. Yeah, no headphones.
Did you have an autograph booth set up, Moose?
I actually asked for a few autographs.
Did you ask for their bibs when they finish your races?
Yeah, I was at the bibs. I was at the end pinching bibs and getting them to sign it, that kind of thing.
Whose did you get?
The winner? Rose? No, I didn't get anyone. but I like that. There's a good buzz there. There's a lot of kids floating around, and they're like a couple of Ballarat kids, actually. They were the ones there pinching the bibs and getting photos. So Ballarat distance running in the juniors is huge, and they all come up to Zatopek every year. You see them run around. It's good.
Isn't it great that they can do that? The bibs are in high demand.
Mate. Yeah. They can literally walk up to their idol at the end of the race, have a chat to them, get a photo, get a signature, and their day, like their night is made. It's just, they're so happy.
Andy Buchanan, I was talking to him, and he said like kids were coming up to him saying they heard him on the interview last week and stuff.
No one couldn't believe it. Surely.
That's what he said. That's what he said. So you didn't sign any autographs, Moose?
I know where this is going. I tried not to.
At least you're going to be honest about it, Moose, and not flat out deny it.
I had to because it was an Inside Running shirt. So that's where the gag was, I think.
Oh, you signed an Inside Running shirt.
Yeah, it was an Inside Running t-shirt, and it had all the signatures on it. So I said, look, I did nothing tonight. I shouldn't be signing this. And he said, no, you've got to. And so I saw it was inside running shirt, so I signed it, actually.
What do you mean it had all, like, athletes' t-shirts? Like, Brad, you haven't signed any shirts, have you?
No, I've never signed an inside running t-shirt.
Yeah. No, I mean, the little fella was getting getting pictures of all the athletes on his inside running shirt.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Frame that
up. Is that the gag? Is that the go?
Yeah, I got this message today saying, ha-ha, mate, funniest thing happened at Zatopek. After the women's 10K, Moose is having a chat to Ali about her race. Some 12-year-old kid rolls over with a texter and white T-shirt and asks Moose for an autograph. He's like, nah, why don't you get Ali's autograph instead? She just raced. The kid's like, nope, I really want yours, Moose. Moose reluctantly signs it. Then the kid just trudges off without even asking Ali.
No.
That's the message I got.
It may have looked like that. However, he said, no, I've already got Ali's autograph on it.
Oh, okay. So, this bystander wouldn't have known that.
That's right. Yeah, no, I made sure of that.
That's right. Yeah. Good work. Well, tell us about, we'll talk, unpack all things Zatopek later on. Got heaps of news, as I said, but we'll start off recapping our weeks. Do you want to go first, Julian?
Yeah, I can go first, and I can do it a little easier this week because someone bought me a Strava subscription.
No, really?
Yeah, after our chat last week.
Brad, did you get one?
No. Did you have to give up a Surf Coast Track Club singlet in return?
I did. Do a few little customer service things at work that may have helped someone out. However, it's still a very nice thing. So I appreciate that, Ryan, his name is, and he hooked me up. So let me get on to my week because...
Starting January 18.
Yeah, it feels weird doing this, doesn't it? Feels like it happened ages ago.
Yeah, and I thought I could look at it like on a different calendar because I have this subscription now, but I can't actually. So when I go on training calendar, I can look at it that way.
You can go so, training log though now. Go training and then under subscription there it says training log.
Yeah, but it only shows you like an outline, which I'll do. So on the I was actually really tired last week. Last week I'd come off the race and a lot of travel, and I woke up tired Monday. Pretty sure I ran with Ali and Bree that morning, and then ran in the afternoon as well. The next morning, I just had an easy run because Ali didn't give me a workout because of the race on the Friday night beforehand, which turned out was pretty good because I really wasn't feeling like doing a workout. So I ran 10 miles, then did 10 by, I was actually 10 by 10 second hill sprints. So that was wrong. So yeah, I finished and instead of doing strides, I did uphill hill sprints. And then off to work, ran Tuesday afternoon in Ballarat. Wednesday morning, ran 10 miles in Ballarat. So I ran around like the forest loop. That was pretty fun, actually. I sort of miss Ballarat with some of the runs out there, like doing them every day. It's a different kind of running. It's very tough out there. It's a bit tougher than down the coast. The hills are steeper, I reckon, in Ballarat, and there's more of them. That afternoon, it was sort of a late second run, drove back to Anglesey and got dropped off about 6K out of town and up on the top of the hill, so I could pretty much just run downhill for 6K all the way back to home, and it was pretty fun, like rolling down the hill. Getting out of a car after a 90-minute drive, not so fun, so I've probably got to be careful of that. Everything ties up. You can't kind of just got to do maybe 5 minutes of walking before I go for that jog. Thursday morning, ran again 16K, and then the afternoon 7K, and then Friday I did a workout in Geelong, so 12K tempo. I ran this step for step with Matt Gunther, who is preparing for Hobart Marathon. We ran 12K tempo around the river in Geelong. So basically you start at Landyfield, you run about 2K along, you turn around a corner, just run on the, the concrete footpath around the river. It's sort of snakes. It's pretty curvy. It's really flat, but it is a bit curvy, and it goes through some dark, like some forested areas where your GPS has a bit of trouble picking it up. So it's always a bit dodgy there. And if anyone's run the Geelong Half Marathon, then you would know this. We basically run the Geelong Half Marathon first 7K in reverse. So that's the area. And then we head out onto this crit track. So a special made bike crit track that's really curvy. Also a shitty GPS loop, but it's 2.2K long. And then we headed back. So we ended up running 3:13s. It was too hard for what it was supposed to be. It was a bit too high. I think Gunther's was as well. But we got it. We got it done. So not too bad. And then in the afternoon, had a jog, 6K, just cruising around town. Saturday morning, just got out like a bit of orange doctor right before the sun came up. Ran 14K before I headed off to work. There's these roadworks that are being done on a really cool tempo loop that I've got planned, like a hilly tempo. And the fence has been up for about probably 12 months now, and they're just starting to remove it. So I'm getting excited about that. Had the Christmas party Saturday night, and then stayed in Ballarat Sunday morning. Tried to get the Ballarat running group together, but it was only me in the end. Mona came along on his bike, so we ran 32. Well, I ran 32K. Average pace was 4:13, and we climbed a bit. I think I climbed about 550 or so meters, and got going towards the end. It got quite hot, and I just kind of wanted it over, but I started feeling good, started moving, and I think this was the result of not doing a workout early in the week. I just had a bit more energy late. So I got 32K done there, and then in the Arvo, just a cruisy 6K around Anglesey, and it was pretty hot that evening. So in the end, 167K with one workout, but I'm going to count that long run as a bit of a workout too. So I think I'm going to start pushing the long runs a bit and respecting them a bit more. So I might start pushing Tuesdays out to Wednesdays, because I'll find it hard to do workouts on Tuesdays going forward with the long run getting up like that.
Mm. So like going into your marathon kind of build up Wednesday, Sunday stuff.
Wednesday, Friday, Sunday.
Okay.
So still, yeah, before I get into the full marathon stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yep. You've got to prioritize that recovery off the Sunday run, but still do two workouts.
Yeah, and the Wednesday workouts won't be hard enough that I need 2 days in between.
Yeah.
Before I go again, especially if I go Wednesday morning, Friday afternoon, you've got an extra sort of 12 hours there, which will help as well.
Hey, Moose, give us a Mona update. Is he running much, or is he busted?
He ran like 17:30 at Parkrun on the weekend. He's a freak. An absolute freak of a man. And there's a reason that he got to the heights that he did during his career. He can't let people beat him. Mm-hmm. Like, no matter what his body's like or his fitness level, when he gets in a race, there would be no bigger competitor than him that I've ever met in my life. The mindset's different. He's an absolute savage hunter of a man.
Did he win?
No, he actually got beat by a kid who was in town, who'd run like 8:34 or something for 3K.
He came third.
Someone else beat him, maybe.
Yeah, someone just got him by 4 seconds.
Oh, that's right. Outsprinted him, he said.
Oh, bullshit.
So Mona said, I tried to get rid of him at 1K. I tried to put a big surge in, couldn't shake him. And then in the end, I think it was the kid's coach, the kid who won. This was his coach, who was still sort of like, I think, mid-30s or something.
Rubbing salt into the wound, the athlete and the coach. Or
yeah. Tell him up. And you know he would have been stewing on that all day too. Yeah. No, he's such a... You spend 2.5 hours with him, and it's just hearing stories. You can get his great advice, a lot of wisdom. talking about how it was and what he thinks is the future and the difference between, say, the difference between someone who has talent but never makes it and then him making it, I guess. Or not him making it, but those around him that have made it and the culture that he grew in Ballarat and what it created for those that trained around him. It was just helpful to me, for someone who is trying to create that sort of culture as well, within the training group I have, to hear the sorts of stories he had and the advice that he had and what it was like back then in Ballarat.
He's so passionate about the sport. That's one thing I've always liked, the fact that it's like some of our other superstars of the sport have sort of, like, they're still involved in some aspect, but Mona genuinely loves it and still takes a really keen interest and really wants the best for the sport. Which is pretty cool.
Did he pick the winners for Zatopek Moose? Did you ask him who was going to win?
Nah, I didn't ask him who was going to win. I don't think we did chat about some athletes, some current day athletes, but we didn't really talk about Zatopek, to be honest. Talked about sort of the race, the marathon race, that kind of thing, about AA and stuff, and he's in the inner sanctum there. He's on the sports commission, so he can't say a lot of things to me, and he doesn't. He pulls back because there's conflict. Like, there's a lot of confidential stuff because he's at the very, like, he's on the Australian Sports Commission, and they decide who gets funding to where within the sporting bodies within Australia. So it's interesting. Some of the conversations are like way above my level of knowledge. But it is interesting to hear how it sort of, the different sports justify their funding and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that'd be pretty interesting. Mm. How many people would sit on that panel with him?
I don't know, but there's big business people there, I think. Yeah. So they're the ones that, they're like the high flyers, the real successful types, the CEOs of big major corporations, that kind of thing, that that understand what to, when you're given however many million dollars and you have to decide who gets it, it's a pretty hard job, and there's a lot of consequence to it as well. So they get in some people that are not afraid to make decisions.
Be fascinating, wouldn't it, being a fly on the wall in some of those meetings?
Yeah, it'd be hard work. It'd be real hard work.
Oh yeah, imagine how much it would just go straight over our heads. Well, mine anyway. Yeah. I'll talk for myself here.
Yeah. No, you're right, it would.
That's a good week. Bradley, you can tell us about yours.
Yeah, sure. So Monday kicked off with a 45-minute loop around Mulligans. I had a pair, the original Zoom Flies that came out. I've got a pair that have only done, like, I don't know, 70 or between 70 and 100K, something like that. So I chucked them on, haven't running them for ages, and, yeah, they're a great shoe. I loved it, so... Yeah, posted here, enjoyable 45 minutes. That was like just 4:21s. Ran in the afternoon, just another lap around Mulligans at 4:13s. Tuesday morning before Viv went to work, just did another lap out there at 4:25s. And then we headed to the track for our group track session. So the session was 4 200s off a 1:45 cycle, and then 5 600s off a 3:45 cycle, and then back to 4 200s off a 1:45 cycle. I've been finding that the start of, like, my sessions have felt pretty rubbish, and, like, even though I warm up for 20 minutes and do some strides, like, I just don't feel like I'm completely activated, and the first half of the sessions feel real shit until, you know, everything starts to then loosen off, and then the back end of the sessions feel quite good. So I thought maybe if I do a few 200s beforehand, it'll just make the 600s feel a little bit smoother, which it sort of didn't really. So we're in, like, between 31 and 32 seconds for the first set of 200s, and was getting, I guess, about 70 seconds recovery. And then, with the sixes, like, it was relatively windy at the start of the session, but ran like 1:45 and 1:45 for the first two reps, and, like, I felt like I was gassed, and I was getting, you know, 3:45 cycle, I'm getting 2 minutes recovery. Anyway, there was a young guy there who was, like, on my shoulder for the first two reps, and said, you can lead if you like. And so he actually led for the next two reps, and we went 143, 144, and then I actually started to feel good. And then my last rep was 141, and it felt easier than what the first two 145 felt. And then the second set of 200s was like 31, 30, 30, and 29. So, yeah, I just can't figure out why the first part of sessions just feel really, really ordinary, and then I start to move okay towards the end. But I guess it was an okay session. Recoveries were probably a little bit too generous, but it's more just to cater for sort of the majority of the group. So if I'm having a little bit extra recovery, that's fine.
Maybe you could experiment with some different warm-ups.
Yeah.
So, you could eat, like, do you just do a 20-minute warm-up and do drills and some 80-meter strides? Is that what you do at the moment?
Yeah, and I probably don't do, like, I don't do a heap of drills. Like, I know the times that I've gone out and done, say, 30 minutes at an oval and then spent 10 or 15 minutes doing drills and then done some strides. Those strides definitely feel way better after having done 10 or 15 minutes of drills, but I don't spend enough time doing that in these warm-ups, which I probably should. Which drills in particular, Moose, do you do?
Not so much. So I do A skips, B skip. I do a butt kick. I like to do some thoracic sort of mobility work. So like arm swinging, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But to me, it might not be so much the drills. It might be instead of doing 10-second stride, do like a 2-minute kind of steady effort, and just change things up a little. And because that might mean that all of a sudden you're primed for those first few reps, whereas doing 10-second strides might not do anything for you.
Yeah, and even the 200s didn't seem to do much for me when it came to doing the 600s. Because to try and explain how I felt doing strides in the 200s, you know, like when you're a bit tight through your sort of back and thoracic and you feel like you're sort of dragging your bum on the ground a little bit, as opposed to really like opening up your stride and feel like you're bouncing along.
That's
exactly how I felt for the first set of 200s and the first half of the sixes. And then after that, I'm like, oh, I'm actually bounding along now. And 141, as I said, felt way easier than the first two at 145.
Yeah. You could try like a three minute rep where the first minute you're kind of jogging steady, the second minute you get up to sort of half marathon effort, and then the last minute is more like a almost like the same pace that you'll run your 600 at or something like that, and then give yourself a minute after that and get into your workout.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good.
It's almost like a rep, but then you could go and do your 200s after that.
Yeah, I definitely need to change that around. So, and I'll just give a shout out. It was Tim Barnett was the youngster who was paced a few reps. He blew himself up on the last rep, but he's a 16-minute 5K guy, so he was probably running a little bit too hard. But I appreciated somebody jumping in and having a go at leading. So that was Tuesday. Wednesday I met Trav and Rob. Guy, our coach, for our midweek sort of long run. So we just did from the Mulligan's car park out to sort of the Federal Highway and back. So it's just over 18K. Sort of 4:12s for that one. Then Thursday, got out in the morning. It was pretty hot actually. I ran at like 11 o'clock, 4:20s for 45 minutes. And then Friday morning, met Rob out at Mulligan's for a 25-minute tempo. And it's probably one thing that I've neglected a little bit since, you know, increasing the amount of running I've been doing, and that's either a hill session or a hilly tempo. And it makes you so much stronger. And you actually know when you've been missing those things. So, like, I did 25 minutes out at Mulligan's on the Friday morning. Like, I didn't feel amazing, same sort of thing, Moose. Like, I probably even did less activation for this one just because it's in the bush. You just sort of do your warm up, do a few strides. I gave Rob a 2-minute head start, thinking that then we'd probably finish sort of, or I'd catch him at some point and then he would follow me for the last couple of K. But I never actually caught him. And so I averaged 3:26s for 25 minutes. As I said, it didn't feel amazing, and like it doesn't look that good on paper, but the week before I did like 25 minutes at 3.16s around the AIS on the road in a pair of Next Percent. And it's this sort of training that on Strava, it doesn't actually look that good. But I reckon I got more benefit from that session than I did from doing, 25 minutes on the road. And if I keep doing either hill sessions or this sort of stuff, that's where I think I'll see the biggest sort of improvement in my running in the short term. A bit like what you were saying before about, you miss running just through the hills in Ballarat because it makes you so strong. I've been doing a fair bit of speed work, but I don't feel like that speed work is actually helping me a lot. Whereas I feel like my speed would improve by actually getting stronger over these hills, which, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's sort of the way that I've always found I run best is when I'm running well over hills, I run well on the flat and fast on the flat.
Yeah, probably not like speed work, but I know what you mean. Say like 30-second to 2-minute reps, you'll still be stronger. Yeah.
Yep. That was a Friday morning. Friday afternoon, got out for another lap, 4:21s, and then we had a wedding in Bermagui, which is about a 3-hour drive from here down the coast on the Saturday night. So I didn't really want to have to, even though it's some lovely running down there, I didn't really want to have to get up on Sunday morning after a wedding and do a long run. So I went and did that early on Saturday morning, just another 2 hours. 4:13s, pretty much same loop I did the week before. It was hot by the end, but it was, it was probably only 15, 16 degrees when I started. So I at least got the first hour and a half. It was actually quite nice. And then we jumped in the car, drove down to the wedding, got up the next morning and just did 45 minutes just on the flat, sort of just out and back. It's a really nice place, Bermagui. And that was 4:12s, and then had a nice swim afterwards before the 3-hour drive home. So it was our first kid-free night since Collis was born. So it was nice to get away for a night. 132K for the week.
Put some beers down.
I probably had four. So I was
four.
After two, I thought, oh man, I was already so pissed. But then the food came out, and I then sort of plateaued. And then because it was out at a winery, they had a bus pick us up from where we were staying, and so it was like a 20-minute like sort of bus ride. And the only way back home was on the bus, and so the bus didn't leave till like 11:15. And those were restrictions on how many people could actually be on the dance floor. So you had to have your name as a pre-registered dancer, which Viv and I weren't. So so we just sort of sat around and had a chat to. I didn't know many people there. I knew one of Viv's friends and her her husband or fiance. So but it was a good night. Four beers was enough. I woke up the next morning feeling pretty good. So.
He's a good drinker though. I've drank with him before. Moose up here, he would have had 10 beers, I reckon. He pulled up all right.
I find my first two are the first two. I'm like, oh man, I'm gone, and then I sort of plateau a bit.
Yeah, that'd be it.
I'm still a lightweight.
You're pretty dedicated. Like wedding weekend, could have easily just ditched the long run. Now you're retired and not got any races coming up. You still got out for 2 hours and then a 3-hour drive. Like, did you think, I just don't need to do a long run this week?
No, because I just know, there's no big races or I'm not really training for anything in particular. I just know how important the long run is. Like, it's the most important run you do every week if you want to maintain, maintain good running and you want to run decent sessions.
Right. For a bloke who retired, you're certainly talking like a runner.
I'm talking like I'm doing two sessions a week. I'm doing a long run. I've almost strung together, I think, 50 consecutive days. But there's certainly nothing on paper session wise that I just go, oh, I'm in really good shape, which, until that time happens, I don't really see much point in racing because I'm only going to be disappointed with the result.
Very good, though. I like it. Whiz through my week. Monday, 70 minutes at 4:33 pace, 15.3K. Tuesday, did some threshold efforts, 7 by 6 minutes at about 3:11, 3:12 pace with 2 minutes jog between. Comes out a pretty big workout. I've got 16K done at 3:23 pace. Heart rate, just as what I was focusing on, just trying to keep it between 160 and 165. It was a good workout. Archie and I both did this one together. Just breaks up a bit. Probably similar, or not quite fit enough to do what you did, Moose, going out and doing, do you do 15K at that pace? 16K? Wow. 12K, yeah. So trying to still get some longer workouts in, but to get the rest every 6 minutes, and then the next step we'll try to actually string this together for, you know, 30, 35 minutes without having 2 minutes jog in between.
7 by 6 is a fucking lot still.
But at
it's
that,
a lot of intervals.
At that, yeah, it's a lot of intervals, but at that pace it's pretty comfortable. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I think if you were doing it at quicker than that, it'd be hard work. Like, it probably looks better than it actually is. And you probably look at my heart rate. We were kind of doing it pretty comfortable. It was really, yeah, this day it was really humid, I think.
2 minutes is a lot between 6 minute intervals, actually.
Yeah. So
you could probably have done that off 30 seconds jog.
Well, the plan is probably close to do something like that with no recovery.
Yeah, you know well, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, like this is
16K at 3:11s.
Which we did before that half marathon, we timed right, we did like, this is just getting us to that stage, like the building block before that. So it looks harder than it actually is on paper when you look at the splits and the recovery time you're having in there. Easy afternoon run, 6.3K, 30 minutes, 4:43 pace. Wednesday, I did 75 minutes, so 16.7K at 4:29s. Medium long run on Thursday, 90 minutes. Felt great in this one, actually. Like, for me, I think I ran the last 5K in under 20 minutes. Like, that is very rare that I get under 4 minute K pace when I'm out jogging. Just felt like I was covering the ground really well. Sometimes I dislike this run. It's like my least favorite run of the week, just because I get a bit bored out there, and I was kind of flowing really good there. Then on Friday, this was super hot day, actually. We had like a heat wave. It was kind of like 38 degrees every day or hotter for like 5 days there. Did some 3 minute efforts at kind of like 3:02, 3:03 pace off a 90 second jog. Did 8 of those. Yeah, it was all right. Kind of that, not flat out, but you're still working at a pretty decent pace. Good to do it with Archie because we just kind of shared the lead there. Just did one rep each and then swapped it over. And then Saturday, same thing as you, Brad, did the long run on a Saturday because I had a bit of a social gathering on the Saturday afternoon. So we did 30K, started pretty early. I think we started at like 6 a.m. or something, 6:40. So we got the first bit done before it got too hot, but then it got pretty hot later on. Got to parkrun at like maybe an hour 20 in. Did parkrun, just ended up pacing a few people in like a sub 20 minute group, which was good fun. It's funny, the old parkrun though, isn't it? You go down there, you're like running 4 minute K pace, you go through the first K in about 20th position, and then yeah, we end up finishing like third. Like, people just blow to pieces.
I had the same conversation with somebody a couple of days ago, and like, yeah, you hear everybody heavy breathing that first K, and you're like, there's no way you're holding this for another 4K.
One of the best ones I heard was someone was trying to break 20 minutes, but they were like way ahead of us. Like, we weren't organized pacemakers. We just kind of said to a few guys near us, what are you going for? We'll take you through. And we went through a K, and I heard this person, we probably caught him at like 1500, and we asked what they were running. And they said, oh, we're trying to break 20, but we did the first K in 3:45, so we're going to relax this one to 4:15, and then we just have to run 4 minutes for the last three. And in my head, I'm like, that is not how it works. You have banged way too much time early in that first K.
Sounds like you've coached them. That's your technique.
That's why I know it doesn't work, because I've done it so many times myself. So we did that, and actually when I stopped, I got that old, you blokes would have had ITB, runner's knee in the past, pretty common running injury.
I just
felt it like it was just before we got to park run when we're on our long run, so like an hour 20 in, just felt kind of like a bit of soreness on the outside of my knee. And then we did the park run and we stopped and we're talking to some people at the end. We're probably like 15 minutes to go with our 30K long run. And then when we went to start again, it was like, pretty painful. Like, wasn't, I could feel it, like definitely could feel it, but it wasn't that painful that I couldn't run on. Got back to the car all good, but it was a bit concerning because I was like, oh, that kind of escalated really quickly there. Saturday after that long run, went out in the river, like in the boat all day, kind of listened to Hodge 100. That was good. Had a couple of beers and then went for like 30 minutes with my mate Crammers the next day, who was up from Bendigo. And yeah, it was really, really sore. Like if he wasn't there, I probably would have turned around, you know, 10 minutes in and went home. And yeah, 30 minutes was the most I was doing. Like it's just it's funny because I was comparing it to that hammy injury I had. Like 1 out of 10, you can run through it all good, but you just know it's there. Whereas this for me was like, oh no, this is actually painful every step, and you feel like you're almost gonna lose strength in your knee and kind of go down, kind of thing. So, pretty good week up until then, and I probably think, I don't want to admit it, but maybe because I went 90 minutes Thursday, workout Friday, long run Saturday, I just overdid it with 3 days in a row just because I wanted to drink beers in the afternoon Saturday. And maybe I just didn't have that recovery day that I'd usually have on the Saturday. And my IT, well, everything's just tight. Like it's a pretty common injury, and I've had it before and I know how to get rid of it. And yeah, hopefully this week's going to be a bit of a write-off, this week we're recording in, but then hopefully I can get back on the horse because I was just starting to string some good stuff together. Feeling pretty good. But anyway, no any remedies for me, boys? What'd you get rid of it for?
You can get it. I mean, have you tried anti-inflams so far?
Yep, I'm on the anti-inflams. I'm on the foam roller flat out. Got the spiky ball out as well. Probably the next step is booking in and getting some treatment or even dry needling to kind of release it.
Yeah, you can. A lot of the time, if you sort of have that, they might prescribe like physio, like exercises, glute stuff, hamstring stuff, maybe.
Yeah.
And then if it's really aggro, you can get cortisone injection into the bursa, and then sometimes they do a surgery as well. There's a couple of kinds of surgery you can get for it. Like one of them is to lengthen the ITB, so they put like a little Z cut through it. It almost like, because it's almost like a sheath or a fascia, and it sort of it stretches it, and so it takes the pressure off the bursa. And then the other one is they can even remove bursas now, I think.
Jeez, I've never heard of anyone getting surgery from it. I thought it was just like...
Mottram got this
was
surgery.
Was that for ITB? I knew he had Achilles surgery. I didn't realise it was ITB as well.
I'm pretty sure he had this surgery, yeah. It's like called Z. Oh, I was nearly going to get it one time. I think it got more common. It's like, it's pretty... I guess it depends what sports doc you go to, but... Yeah, people do it quite often.
Yeah, right. Anyway, still pretty positive. I'll turn around hopefully the next couple of days. I'll report that next week. Saying some Patreon supporters, eh? Kicks off, Brad.
All right, I've got Nick Acutt. I think that's how you pronounce his name. He's UK-based. He's got a request to follow on Strava, but we found out that he's run 37.57 for 10K at the Run Through Olympic Park event. And it looks like our researcher has found his school report, because it says Nick did a great job as head of school and used his authority and position well to the benefit of the boys. Crescent House, Abingdon School, bloody legit as. So I don't think that last bit, bloody legit as, was actually in the school report part.
How did you get the school report?
I couldn't get any time. I've only got one time on him, but I can get his school report. I'm pretty good at this stuff. Nah, it was in a...
Is that some confidentiality thing that you've just destroyed?
It was the school. You should see the school. If you got Google open, type that school in. This is a legit school. That's what I meant by bloody legit as the school, Bradley, not his school report.
Oh.
So he was the head of that, like, Crescent House or whatever it is, that house over there. And they must have done, like, the yearbook at the end of the year talking about the kids who were the most, I don't know, like the head of schools or whatever. This school is, like, massive private school over there.
I think you might be a senior surveyor with Cushman and Wakefield.
Yeah, sounds like someone who would do that, I reckon, coming from that school. Yeah, it's pretty pretty good run too, 37.57. Couldn't find out much more, but Nick, thank you for your support over there in the UK somewhere. Moose, who you got?
You want me to go?
Yeah.
Well, I'm just doing a little bit more background on your guy. I have Brian de Villiers. So Brian's from Warrnambool, Victoria. Did Peaks and Trails 50K, which is fantastic ultra marathon down in the down in Dunkeld in the Southern Grampians in 7 hours 49 minutes. It's you got three peaks there: Mount Sturgeon, the Piccaninny, and then Mount Abrupt, which is the biggest climb of them all. 155 at Warrnambool Half Marathon, and 22:17 for 5K. And you said he's repping a pair of ASICS Nimbus, so I just sort of had a look on our system. He's actually repping a pair of ASICS Nimbus Light, ASICS Gel Nimbus Light 2, and also a pair of Pegasus Trail 2 that he got from our store.
A few people banging on about those new ASIC Nimbus Lights. I think you were talking about them on Shoe Geeks Day when I was listening to it.
Yeah, it's Nimbus Light, pretty fun shoe. We gave one away to Matt Blaschke, who was a winner of our tipping competition. Remind me to organise that, actually.
I think I did yesterday, didn't I? Didn't I say this is the winner? Can you please organise this for me?
Keep reminding me. I told him, but I haven't. He'd be running right now. His Adipec B grade's on now.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's going on.
Yep. So, yeah, thank you, Brian. Appreciate your support in both aspects.
And Brian's a Run to PB guy. Chris O'Neill coaches him, your mate. So I appreciate that support from Run to PB as well, Brian. You're ticking all the boxes.
Yeah, what a legend.
Tom Scanlon, Ferntree Gully, Victoria. Race view results, Tom, so I hope I got these ones right. 17:30 for 5K, 37:29 for 10K, 1:24 for the half, and 2:58 for the Melbourne Marathon 2019. First time under 3 hours there, and Andy Buchanan coached him to that sub three. I remember Andy getting pretty excited about that at the time. So thanks, Tom, Brian, and Nick, for your support over on Patreon. All the other legends over there keep the show alive each week. If the show brings you value, you reckon it's worth chipping in a couple of dollars every week for this content we provide, feel free to go over there on Patreon.
This episode is brought to you by Solution, the new, faster, clinically trialed treatment for shin splints. Designed by athletes for athletes, the Solution is an Australian-born, clinically proven treatment for shin splints that works up to 5 times faster than any available treatment on the market. Using patented counter-traction technology, the solution works while you relax and recover without any disruption to your routine. Wear it while cooking dinner, doing the dishes, or walking the dog. The solution saves you time and money by putting you in control of your treatment. Developed on a foundation of clinical evidence, with results published in the Journal of Science and Medicine in Sports, the solution is trusted by leading sports doctors and worn by professional athletes and Olympians in Australia. Exclusive to listeners of the Inside Running podcast, save $100 on a pair of solutions. That's your second leg for less than half price. Visit solution.com/insiderunning. That's solution.com/insiderunning today.
Rightio, boys. Running news.
Yeah, big week, or big 10 days really, wasn't it?
Yeah, let's start with the Zatopek 10K. Do you want to start an order of the races when they went, or you just want to talk about Rose Davies straight up?
Well, we can talk about them how you have listed on the agenda, because that's better for me.
Okay, that's probably why I paced them in that order, just how I was excited about Rose Davies. You're going to have to tell us some stuff about this, Moose, because you were there, but the women's 10,000 metres was so good to see it as the last event of the night. Mm-hmm. The first thing Brad and I spoke about when we're on our like little live stream watch party thing was what we're most excited about, and we both said this race, just because there were so many storylines in it. I realistically thought there were 6 or 7 people who could potentially win it, so that made it really interesting to follow. That all kind of been pretty honest and open about they were going to go for that qualifying time of 31:25. And we were rather going to see like some amazing performances or going to see some massive blow-ups, which is kind of good to watch as well in a track 25-lap race, because they just kind of start dropping off lap after lap, and it was going to be a bit of the survival of the fittest kind of thing. And what we saw was an amazing display by Rose Davies and Izzy Bat Doyle. They kind of sat at the back of the pack. A few people dropped off. And then they went to the front with Andrea still there. And it was just a massive kick down. And Rose Davies closed, I think, in 65 high, 66 low. And just, yeah, an amazing performance. I was still buzzing the next day when I was out jogging. Just because it was this... I don't know, Rose Davies and Izzy Bat Doyle are kind of here now. We knew that Andrea was solid over 10K. We knew that Jen Gregson was. We knew that Sinead and Ali were, who were far further down the list. But it was good to see two new names at the top.
Well said. We should also go through their times, I suppose. So Rose won in 31:39. Izzy Bat-Doyle was second in 31:43, and Andrea was third in 31:45. So the way Rose closed, like, you got to think that there's a bit more there. Like, not a lot of top level guys close that quick. So impressive run. And I believe a couple of years ago I said Rose Davies was one to watch. So if runners were like shares, I would have made a little bit of money, I reckon. On,
mate, she won Zatopek under 20s. That's a given. That's like, hey, of course she's going to be
there's
good.
A lot. No, there's a lot that can happen between under 20s and...
She's 21.
But when I picked her, like, this was after Noosa a couple of years ago, I raved on about her. So anyway, I got in when the shares weren't super high, whereas now her stocks are rising.
Yeah, she was good, but let's...
But, her and, how can you say her, but after that?
I'm going to give credit to some of the other girls because the way the race panned out was pretty much perfect for Izzy and Rose, how it happened. So they sat, Rose was a little bit more mid-pack. Izzy was at the very back of the pack for probably 6K, I reckon. They didn't take turns on the front. So Sarah Billings did the first three, and then Nat Rule took them to five. And by the time they hit 5K, they went through 15:50. So they were already off the pace by, I think they were trying to run 15:20, so 10 seconds off their planned 5K split. They were trying to run 31:20.
They were trying to
15:40, 31:20. Yep. So there was a bit of onus on someone to go to the front and start driving after that, and obviously Jen Gregson, that sort of fell to her. So she did get on the front and try to drive the train, and it was quite windy that evening. So she, like, to credit to her, she could have sat back and gone, no, I'm going to go and race with the rest of these girls, and we're going to run 32 mid, and I'm going to kick down in the last 200. Whether she could do that or not, that's another story. But she still put her ass on the line and went and did it. When in Burnham and Andrea as well, she did get to the front and pushed things as well. So they got a very nice ride, and strategically, tactically, they did it perfectly for the race, the Australian Championships they were involved in. So they obviously said, okay, we're not going to get the qualifying time, so we're not going to sacrifice ourselves early on to push for those paces. We're going to play this game as if it's a race to win. And they absolutely did that. And Rose closed like she did. And Izzy as well, obviously, ramped it up a little earlier. And, like, it was really cool to watch. We were, like, it felt a little like a changing of the guard.
Mm. That's how it looked on the stream a bit, wasn't it, Brad? Like, I think because we probably had Andrea, Jen and Sinead as the three favourites, and like Ali if she was in shape. So these girls kind of were the fifth and sixth kind of seeded girls, I suppose. So then to come first and second. But you're right, they didn't do work on the front and just sat there and got towed along and made the moves when it kind of mattered at the end of the race.
And it was always very risky and very brave by everyone going at 31:20 pace. Like that, none of the girl, only one girl in that race had the time. So it was new territory for nearly all of them, which is scary stuff, especially the younger girls. And so to put it on the line like that means, yeah, it's difficult to do. And obviously the younger girls, they played it so well. It was really cool.
Is Rose a chance to go to the Olympics if they happen for a roll down? Moose?
Nah, it's I don't think still too down slow. To 10K. Yeah, it's a long way off. I mean, 31:39 to 31:25. 14 seconds. I guess it's not a long way
off. Yeah, I disagree. Like 14 seconds over a 10K in a race where, you know, like you go to a Stanford and like a Peyton Jordan where you just get on the train pretty much the whole way. I don't think 14 seconds, like, for where she's at the moment in her running career is a lot.
That's true.
And the way she finished.
Like, the way she finished showed there was more there. The way that she was sort of fourth gear until that point. I think she can get the time, but whether logistically it plays out that she can get to a race, that'll be the next question.
That's more what I meant. Like, if she doesn't have another opportunity, does that mean the whole world doesn't have many opportunities and they might take people to fill the spots who haven't got the time?
Because
remember people
sure
thinking
that.
Like, however, Sinead just missed it, but they thought she was pretty confident in her getting the roll down positions.
I thought that was for... Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I think because there was racing throughout 2019 still, that there might have been more people getting it. But and then the Americans had it where there's a few people that got it. The 10K doesn't have the field size that the marathon does.
I might try.
We'll get her on soon, and because I'm sure she will have looked into it by the time we get her on the show, we'll find out from her.
Yeah. Any other comments on the women's race there, Moose? How were you going? Were you nervous with Ali going around? Like, she made the decision not to go to that pack and try to pick up a bit of carnage.
Yeah, the carnage didn't occur because the pace backed off. So, I guess Ali's thought. Our thought plan was that if the race went at 31:20 pace, there would be some serious carnage late. However, it didn't. It went slower than that, and it allowed the girls to regroup, get their shit together, and then push on. I think if it was relentless 31:20 pace, then there would be a lot more carnage towards the end, and that's when that second pack could have moved through. But I guess Ali was sort of stuck in a position where every time she came around the bend and looked up, she was hoping to see someone that might give her a chance to hunt down, but there was no one there. And it's a little tough to find motivation to pick it up when there's no one in front of you to hunt down. So she was too far away from the front group to be able to take advantage of hunting people. So that's okay. Like, her race is in August. So for her to be peaking peak fitness at Zatopek running 31:18, which she has run, that's just not a clever thing to be doing. That'd be fucking up your year. So she's in a pretty good position building like this.
Yeah, well put. Men's race, do you want to go to that one next? Brett Robinson got the win. We spoke to most of the winners as well on our watch party. If you want to flick through that, you can see what all these winners said about their performances there. Brett Robinson got the win, 28:00. Thought he might have dipped or something, put in a good last 50 metres coming down the home straight, but he kind of was pretty relaxed coming down there. Jack Rader second, 28:13. Dave McNeil third, 28:16. That makes that the top three. And then we had maybe four or five more guys under 29 minutes. So Ed Goddard, 28:23. Andy Buchanan, 28:35. Tom DiCano from Shoe Geeks, 28:35 as well. And Riley Cox from South Australia, 28:45. Brett was with a pacer, Ben Buckingham, previous interviewee, Patreon supporter, I think, for the first 5K, took him through right on 14, and then Brett just dropped a couple of 63, 64s, got rid of most people, and then nothing really happened after that. Jack was kind of 15 seconds back for the rest of the race, and Brett had a few looks over his shoulders to see where Brett was, where Jack was. And then, yeah, everyone kind of just maintained. A few blow-ups kind of maybe like a bit further back in the pack, and guys were getting lapped all over the place. But Brett was the star of the show, Moose.
He was, and he showed his class. Like, he is the class runner in the field. He dropped the hammer and ended the race at about, the 5-6K mark. And just sort of tempo into the finish. He didn't want to hurt too much, I don't think. And Rainer as well, he was in no man's land, and I think at one point Brett looked around to see where Jack was, and at the very same time Jack was looking around to see where the next group was. It would have been quite a good picture if someone got it. So they kind of knew they were safe-ish. However, Dave and Ed were flying home, and Dave especially. I mean, this man, like, you put a tweet up during the week, this guy just is... Hit the longevity is amazing, and especially given that he had a little shaky lead in, like a few niggles for the last few months. a few sort of losses, a bit of personal sort of tragedy in his life. I was just so happy to see him run that last lap, and just like, he's still at the peak of Australian distance running in the top echelon. I hope that this guy can do something to get him back on some Olympic team or some world champs or Com Games next year. I just love him.
His last lap must have been pretty incredible, because him and Ed were together pretty much at the bell, and he's put, what, 7 seconds into him, and he's only then finished 3 seconds behind Jack. So like, he does have a big kick, Dave. I remember back from his college days, you know, he was always pretty impressive last lap, last 200. So I got the feeling though that Brett, he didn't like push all the way to the finish, but I felt, like after 5K, cause I asked him like on the live stream, I said, oh, you know, going through 14 minutes, did you and Jack then expect to just start to pick it up a bit and sort of run more like that 27:40, 27:45? And he did agree, but then when he picked up the pace for that next sort of 800 between 5 and 6K, I think it sort of stung him more than he thought it would. And then after that, that's when he started then looking around going, all right, I don't think it's my night to really kick down now. I'll just do enough to win.
Yeah.
To the point that he didn't even care about trying to get back under 28 minutes. He just jogged it in.
And his PB was like 27:58. Like, it was only 2 seconds off kind of thing, yeah.
But really, as we said on the live stream, Brady, like, considering what he's run over 5K and considering what he's run over the half, like, it really sets him up. Like, he's capable of running a really quick 10K, but he just hasn't run that many of them and hasn't got in the right races. But there's certainly you'd have to think based on, you know, that 5.5 that, you know, sub 27:30s there.
Yeah, and it was good to see him back on the track, because we haven't seen him race on the track for a while with the marathon stuff he's been doing and the road race and stuff. And he's good for a chat, isn't he, Croaks? Like, he said some good stuff in that post-race interview, and down to earth and good swagger. He's got the whole X factor. He needs his own podcast.
He's honest. Like, that's what I like about him. He's honest. So if you ask him a question, he's going to tell you exactly what is going through his head, not the politically correct answer all the time, which is great.
Yeah. Dave McNeil won in 2008, Moose. Was fourth in 2006. Like, we're talking about years ago. Like, how many years? 13, 14 years ago, to be at the top still. That's amazing.
Right. I mean, yeah, that's right. He just keeps doing it. And I think he just had his first 6 month kind of full-time contract of work. So he's done that as a non-professional athlete. Don't think he has a contract with Nike anymore. So.
And I saw on social media is donating all of his prize money to charity.
Mm.
Yeah. In connection to his recent losses. So,
yeah, good fella. Women's 1500. Lyndon Hall got the win, 4:04. Jenny Blundell second, 4:07. Keely Small third, 4:07. Lyndon Hall's fit, just missed the Olympic qualifying time. Geez, I'd pay some good money to see her and Hull go head-to-head over the 15 with a pacer taking them through to a K at the moment, maybe in a couple of months' time. Imagine that. They should put on an exhibition race, those two.
Yeah, exciting.
Yeah, she's certainly fit, because we said that, like, we weren't sure what sort of shape she was in, because we haven't seen a race anywhere, whereas both Jenny and Keely, like, they've raced each other a lot recently, so we sort of knew where they were at. But, Lyndon obviously has had a really good training block behind her, and I think she said that that's pretty much the fastest time that she's opened a season with, which is good signs for the rest of the season.
For sure. Moose, do you have any comments there before we go to the men's 15?
No, nope.
Jordan Williams got the win, kicked home down the home straight. He was in front early too, about 600. I feel like we're just repeating ourselves here, Brad. We literally had all these conversations 48 hours ago.
Yeah.
Went to the arms with 100 to go. Ryan Gregson was on his shoulder, but he couldn't quite catch Jordan Williams. Signature kick finish, 339.5 to 339.8. Cal Davies, that's a big breakthrough from him. I remember I was telling you about him when I was doing some K-reps with him up at Falls Creek last year.
Oh, yeah.
This was him, young fella from Queensland. He ran 340.9. Some big runs in between there, and Jared Clifford, another world record. Another week we're talking about Jared Clifford breaking a world record at 342.9. Pretty exciting stuff. Men's 1500, some good openers for a few of those guys that we haven't seen yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually watched this next to the coach of Jordan and Ryan.
Nick, we saw you on the live stream.
Yeah, and it was quite amazing. He basically called this race before it even started, it was like, I said, oh, who's going to win this? And he's like, oh, well, I think this will happen then. I think this will happen. And then I think this will happen. And all of those things played out exactly as he said. I was like, whoa, that was pretty good insight. Knows his athletes very well.
Then did you ask him if you could have a hat yet?
No, not quite.
The gag that never gets old, that one, does it?
I have my own hat. Arrow now, and it's much better logo.
Well, maybe you can swap.
Yeah, give him a Surf Coast Track Club singlet for a hat.
Like the soccer internationals when they pass each other like the flag or the whatever it's called.
We know we are the premier track club in the country now.
Oh,
we just have to start getting some results, that's all.
We got pretty excited when we saw you on the stream standing next to him. Like, they just did this pan of the back straight. We're like, hang on, there's Moose, and he's standing next to Nick Bedeau.
It got cold, actually. It was quite windy. It was good to get some insight. He's coached basically coached a lot of the top athletes in this event, in this whole meet. So and he's coached some of the best runners that Australia's ever had. You're talking like Craig Mottram, that kind of thing, and there's some good insights.
You should interview him, Moose.
Yeah, you need to have time to prepare for that. You don't just do that off a couple of hours. Yeah,
you need to do it in person.
Structure it properly. Have actual it couldn't be a shit one. It couldn't be like yours with Andy, right? It has to be. Planned out properly with good, deep, insightful questions and time, and it's got to be in location. So I reckon I might ask him, but then have to do it at some point when I have some days free to get some time together.
It'd have to be a night one too, I reckon, Moose. You could have a couple of beers just to calm the nerves.
He won't be that nervous.
You'll be the nervous one.
I know what you were saying.
Jeff Risley, he won the 800, 148.1. Katrina Bissett won the women's, 202.7. Jeff Risley's not quite done either. Kind of similar train of thought to Dave McNeil. He could be still sticking around for another Olympics. We talked to him on the live stream as well. And Katrina Bissett looked pretty solid for a 202 first up as well. That Australian record's got to get lower and lower as she keeps racing, I reckon. Any comments there, fellas?
No, I missed that. But good, Jeff Risley, it was bloody windy when he was running, probably the windiest part of the night. So for him to run 148, solid. And good to see him back winning. He's won the last two races I've watched him in.
I love the way he moves. If I could look half as good as that, it'd be amazing. Even if I ran really, really slow, if I just looked that good, it would be impressive.
He was good for a chat too, eh, Croaks?
Yeah, he was. Very honest.
That's all very honest. That's Zatopek. A few quick fire results from around Australia, around the world actually. Adam Fogg, he ran a 3:39 1500 up in Queensland as well. Your mate Krogs from your Bakerstown team. Big PB. I was just thinking, Nationals 1500. Gregson, Williams, Fogg, Stewie, Ramsden, who ran 3:34.9, got a qualifier, same as Stewie's. Got the qualifier the other week over in Perth. He did a pretty solo time trial kind of race. A few blokes hooked him up. Fastest guy on Australian soil for 32 years. Luke Matthews. Who else am I missing? It's a National 15 could be the biggest race you've ever seen.
Ollie Hoare.
Yep, that was another one.
He probably won't be. Well, I guess he'll have to come back, won't he?
If they make it to qualify for Olympics, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But you've got to think, Ramsden and Stewie are outliers at the moment to me.
Yeah, agree. That's the comment I was going to make as well, Moose. Like, they're a cut above the rest.
Yeah. Ramsden did that shit solo. Mm. So did Stewie. Mm. And, Williams and Gregson were in a race that was actually paced for 3:39, and they ran 3:39. But, they had a pack of people, and there was adrenaline going with a decent crowd. Stewie did it down at a fucking Bushman's AV shield meet, and Ramsden did it in WA, but basically by himself. I mean, he obviously loves that track there.
Ollie Hoare, if he can get back to the shape that he was in when he was doing those races in the US, then he's because he was doing those solo as well. So there's probably those three probably standouts.
Wouldn't it?
Ollie's last race wasn't amazing from what he was doing before that.
Yeah. Brad, tell us about a couple of Americans. Pat Tin and 1.5 marathon over there, Las Vegas.
Yeah, so Las Vegas half marathon. He won the race in 62:37, and Moose's mate Molly Seidel, she won the women's in 69:19, which was a PB, and she's recently signed with Puma, so that's her first official race for Puma.
What do you know about the new Puma Super Shoe Moose? Is it good? You got it?
No, I haven't got it, but to me, it doesn't look like there's much offered outside of what's currently available. They're not doing anything that innovative. Well, they are for Puma, but nothing outside of like what we've seen from other brands. Pretty sure one of the Nike kind of engineers may have gone there at some point, but because the upper looks exactly like a Pegasus Turbo 2. And the midsole looks like something from Skechers, but it's still Puma, like super unpredictable brand. They come up for a year or two, like make big claims about what they're going to do, and then disappear for 5 years, 6 years, and no one hears of them. But they've obviously gone at it now with some cash involved, and they're signing people and they're looking at different groups in different areas and. They're trying to back it up with some footwear as well, so we'll see.
They were a powerhouse in middle distance track races back in like the late 90s, early 2000s. Like probably a bit before your time, Moose. But a lot of the top guys in Kenya were sponsored by them, like Noah Yang and these guys. Really, really popular back then. But then they sort of went missing for a long time.
Yeah, well, that's it. They go missing. And they get into different shit. Like, they're obviously big in footy. They got the Puma King, and they signed a big soccer player. Shit, a massive one. I can't remember which one it was, but unbelievably big soccer player. I'm just not into soccer, so I can't remember.
And sprinting as well, obviously. Sprinting, like Usain Bolt.
When they go big, they fucking go big. But then it's like they spend all their money and they don't put any of it into actual product. Because you don't really see much. Like, I've never owned a Puma shoe to run in.
Yeah, neither. Could you buy that shoe in Australia? That super shoe they're wearing?
Not currently.
Yeah, so that's the thing. How do you get it?
After
this rant, they won't want to sponsor a show.
That's exactly what I was thinking, Croak. So I'm like, hang on. We need to do a shoe review on this. Stop slagging them off, Moose.
Money. You blokes love money too much.
We're talking about integrity.
We want the shoe.
Oh, listen to it.
Moose gets on this shoe geek episode, Brad, and he just starts rolling off all these shoes he's got. I'm just like, oh, I'd just take two pairs. That's why I'm probably injured, running old shoes, because I can't afford any new running shoes.
Runners are notoriously tight athletes.
Unemployed for 5 weeks.
Triathletes come in by 15 pairs of everything, 6 singlets, big headlamp, like everything. Runner comes in, he's one shoe for the year that he spends 3,500 kilometers in, and like, oh, do I really need this? Like, you need this. You're a runner.
I won't tell you about my successful trip to the factory outlet last week then.
What about Saturday, Moose? Brad sends me a message going, how much would you pay for like 2 pairs of Peg Turbos, 1 pair of Vomeros, 1 pair of, something else, New Balance 1080s. And I'm like, I don't know, tell me, Brad, how much? He's like, $90 each or something. I'm like, just cleaned up at the factory.
Yeah. Go support the the brands that support you, hey?
Support my family. Save $300 and I can put food on the table.
Support, that is classic you. And that's, like, this just suits your personality, though, doesn't it?
Oh, I think I've struck a chord there, Brady.
Yeah, when he had that awkward pause, I was like, ooh. Anyway, talking about shoes, Moose, we're still on the topic. Hoka, they did a shoe launch with a race, didn't they? Is this what this is? They've done it before, haven't they? Bit of marketing around a new shoe, and then they get all their athletes to have a crack at some records.
Yeah, so they did it for Walmsley. When the first one, like this shoe came out called, I think it was the Carbon X, the first time they did it. And now the Carbon X 2 came out, so they decided to put on this 100K race, had a crack at breaking the world record, who was held by a Japanese fella. And Walmsley is sort of the pin-up boy for ultra running. He did have a crack at the US marathon trials. I think he ran maybe 2:15 that day. He's run pretty quick over a half, I think maybe 63, 64. He ran at Houston, but he's very good over the longer stuff. And so he fell 12 seconds short after running for 6 hours and 9 minutes. He was 12 seconds short of the world record. So he obviously got the American record, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
But he ran 3:41 per kilometer for 100K. Now, that's pretty bloody good.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, the shoe that they were promoting during this event would probably not be considered their fast shoe. So they have another shoe called the Rocket X, which is uses their midsole foam that is more similar to like Nike's Zoom X. And so it's probably considered a super shoe versus this Rocket X, which is versus the Carbon X2, which is a slightly heavier, like, I don't know, maybe less performance-based. And so you would think if he had worn it.
Could have made the difference.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing.
Is this like Kipchoge going out there and trying to break 2 hours, but they're like, we want you to do it in the Zoom Fly because we want to promote that shoe instead of the next pretty percent much. Of the Alpha Fly?
Pretty much. That's how it rolled. It might be like if there's an Alpha Fly kicking around. So say like the shoe launches for the new Vapor Fly next percent, but Kipchoge could wear the Alpha Fly, but the launches for the other thing, so they put him in the Vapor Fly. It's kind of like that. So this shoe is probably aimed at racing still, but isn't sort of their top tier racing shoe as such.
Yeah, right. It looked good. The marketing was good. They all looked good in their matching singlets and stuff.
Yeah, and we talk about it on Shoe Geeks. They are a good brand for that stuff. They support running over there. They back training groups. They allow runners to be professionals in terms of like what they pay for contracts and stuff. And they definitely do it well in America.
Right. Nearly done with results here, ladies and gents. Last one, Australia Day 5K invitation race in Sydney. Looked like it was going through the main drag there. Brad, you know more about Sydney than I do. Joe Burgess got the win, 14:44. Lauren Reed got the women's win in 16:01. Busy couple of days for Lauren because she also broke the parkrun world record on Saturday. She ran 54:45 at the Parramatta parkrun, I think it was. Took 4 seconds off the parkrun world record that Charlotte Arter had over in the UK. I got deep into some Facebook comments about parkrun world records last night, actually. And there was people going both ways about should they have them, should they not have some. And then there were some people saying like they should be like celebrating the volunteers more, not like the people who run fast. And there was just arguments going on everywhere. In this parkrun forum. Yeah, then Lauren actually had commented. That's why I think it came up. I think I'm a Facebook friend of her, and she'd actually replied to some people having a go, saying that they shouldn't be celebrating fast times. And, yeah, it was an interesting thread. And I don't even know, like I suppose it really depends on what parkrun means to you kind of thing, how much you look into these records and things like that and how much you rate them or don't rate them. And, yeah, it's an interesting discussion because I just think it's that whole – it's good to celebrate them, but you're never going to have a level playing field just because the parkruns are all so different.
And parkrun's not designed for elite. Like, it's not designed for elite competition. It is more participation based.
That's what some people are saying. And there's a lot of people who would still be inspired though by seeing those times, wouldn't they?
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah. But like, you know, all the courses are different. Like, it's a great run, but. Yeah, I wonder why she didn't run Zatopek.
Well, is she from the Northern Beaches?
Yeah, so maybe
she couldn't get there.
I think this is originally why they put it on. So traditionally on Australia Day, they have a wheelchair race through Circular Quay. And because there was potentially an issue for people getting down to Zatopek from Sydney, Benny Saint and those guys were chatting to Wayne Larden, who was organising the wheelchair race, and managed to sort out having an elite 5K race through there. So it'd be cool if that sort of continued, and it was a tradition that they had an Australia Day 5K down at Circular Quay. So that's how that came about.
Right, some good background there from you. UK cross country news. You've been seeing this stuff popping up. Been over my social media a bit. They are having the conversation and doing some consultation about whether women should be running the same distance as men in cross country running. I think maybe 2 or 3 years ago, the World Athletics, the IAAF, changed. So men and women would run the same distance at like world cross countries and things like that. I know Athletics Victoria made that change at the same time. What does Athletics New South Wales do, Brad? They changed?
Yeah, I think it was universal. I think every state in Australia, once World Athletics changed it. So it used to be men run 12K, women run 8, and then they just changed it so that everybody runs 10. So
yeah.
New South Wales have changed it to 10 as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I just assumed the whole world did this. But now there's a bit of debate over there in the UK because Paula Radcliffe, Laura Muir, I know Charlotte Perdue, there was a whole list of some like high-profile British runners who kind of came out and criticised UK Athletics' decision to launch the consultation on whether women should be able to run the same distance as men in cross-country running. They didn't want it to change because they thought it... got to get the words right here, undermined their previous performances. And they kind of had a whole list of like different reasons why they didn't want it to change. I was a bit surprised. I thought I'd read it the wrong way to start off with. I thought they'd be going to a similar distance. And I know you were too, Moose, when I sent it through to you. And you're like, wait, they want it to be different. But yeah, it was an interesting take on it. The CEO of UKA, she kind of come out though and kind of denied the claims that athletes' past achievements could be undermined if they did change the distance, and it should be equal. Thoughts, boys? You read into it much?
Oh, I stay away from these ones a little bit because it seems like there's always someone offended with something at the moment.
And it is three blokes on a podcast talking about it now, so maybe we should just stay in our lanes, but yeah.
How does it undermine past performances?
So they all wrote a letter and they like signed it, and then the thing was when they signed it, they all had like their past performances in cross country, like next to their, like I would say, like world cross country representative this year or European Championship, anything like that. Let me talk. Someone talk while I'm googling this.
But if any, for me, it's like, well, if you have to go and race world cross, which is 10K, why not prepare athletes to run 10K? And it's not like you're going from 1500 meters to 10K. It's 8K to 10K. So most athletes, if they can run 8K, it's not a big jump to run 10. I'm surprised that it's such an issue.
I thought it would be more of an issue that they didn't change it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be considered sort of unequal?
Yeah. Well, wasn't there the complaints back in the day that women weren't allowed to run the marathon at all? And like, so yeah.
Exactly. Like, are we calling them inferior athletes?
Like,
which one is it? Are you guys equal, or are you not as strong and can't do the things that men can do? Please let us know.
The only reason I thought that maybe some athletes would hate having to go from 8K to 10K would be, you know, your 1500 to 3K runners that can maybe get by on a, you know, up to 8K, but then 10K is just too much of a stretch on, like, for them to compete on the world stage.
That's men and women, though.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that they have to run 10K for world cross, what's the point of preparing somebody domestically to run 8 when they have to run 10?
Yeah. I'll read this to you so I get it right. Some of those names I listed said before, and there's more of them. We'll put all this in the show notes, so do your own reading if you want an accurate representation of what's actually going on here. They say that plans by UKA to move to equalisation without consulting its athletes commission or waiting for a new head of endurance to be appointed are ill-advised, and that any such move will have a detrimental effect on medal prospects for both current and future female cross-country athletes. They also say that a host of problems could arise, such as eating disorders, as well as drop-off in participation rates among elite runners. That's just, you can read this whole report though. But yeah, I found it a bit odd. There's some good Twitter arguments going on. If you want to just type in like UK run chat or something like that, you'll be able to find them all as well. Last bit, I'm trying to skip the listener question because we've been going for so long. Can we go straight to Moose on the Loose?
Yeah, all right.
Happy with that?
Happy with that.
Viv and Carly would be happy with that as well. Brad, yeah. I reckon.
Yeah, might even get a Netflix episode in.
Well, you want Moose on the Loose now?
Yeah.
All right, well, this was an incident that happened, I think it was like, when was it? Last Friday, actually. It was last Friday. So that was 6 days ago. I think you remember the Times article got written about apparently Japan had privately agreed that the Olympics wouldn't go ahead. Now, do we all remember this?
Oh, yeah. How could you miss it?
How could you miss it? Exactly. So the Times wrote an article saying an insider had leaked information that Japan had decided that the games wouldn't go ahead and it's a foregone conclusion or whatever, right? And the Times, like, I know there's some pretty average newspapers out there, especially in Australia. I think the Times is a UK-based paper, but they put it out as in it's the Olympics are cancelled. That's basically the headline, right? And all the other shitty newspapers around the world and social media picked it up and said the Olympics is cancelled, the Olympics is cancelled, right? Within 10 minutes, it had spread across the internet that there was no way the Olympics were being held. It's cancelled. Japan's confirmed it. So it's this. Firstly, that pissed me off that if you even looked inside the actual news, like the article, all you had was one person unconfirmed, an unknown source saying something that everyone else is denying. So obviously this isn't like credible information. And then all the other newspapers never went and did their own research. All they did was just re-report on the fucking papers article that they'd done. But what really pissed me off was we were out training, Ali and I, and we got back to the car and there was a phone message left by a journalist. The message said, the voicemail said, "Hi, Ali. Now that the Olympics is cancelled, I'd love to get your reaction on this. Can you call me back?" So obviously, like, that's the most fucking distressing phone call that you're ever going to get as like someone who's qualified for the Olympics. And like within 5 minutes, we kind of worked out that it was bullshit. And then, but imagine that as a fucking journalist calling someone, saying that shit, leaving a message that you don't know if they've even heard the news yet, asking for their reaction that their whole fucking world's coming down around them. Can you believe that? And then I just thought, how about this fucking journalist who hasn't even investigated the actual facts around the story to come out and say this bullshit? Like, should you not contact the IOC before you make these claims? How about the Japanese Olympic Federation? How about the Australian Olympic Commission, right? Should we not be contacting these people for actual information and statements before you're going to the athletes and reporting this stuff? I just thought it was just terrible journalism, for one, and then a really shitty act to do to an athlete to leave a message on their phone like that. And, yeah, it turns out that I actually really liked the response from all the federations coming out saying, no, this is not credible information. Like the Japanese Prime Minister, the Olympic or the Commissioner or whatever, whoever he is, comes out really strongly, denies the reports, reaffirms their commitment to host the Games and quashes this bullshit social media like viral article. Anyway, I did get worked up about that.
Fair enough too, I reckon. Pretty poor journalism.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, maybe. You make a purchase of the week?
Yeah, just trying to pep him up a bit here, Brad. Just balance things out a bit.
Yeah, I don't want him to be out of, I don't want him to lose sleep now that he's all worked up again.
I did make a purchase. Do you know what I bought? I bought a grinder.
Oh, yeah.
I received
did you get one on St. Ali?
Yep.
No, I had. I actually had points that I'd amassed from a refund on one of my flights.
Fancy so, that. You having a few points banged up somewhere.
Yeah, I had to use them because they're about to expire. So I got a grinder because we have these St. Ali beans that just like smell delicious sitting in the corner, and I haven't been able to put them through the machine. So yeah, I can't wait. And you know what? You know what I've found is a perfect use for those cold brews?
Mm-hmm.
If you're waking up early and you don't have time to make a coffee, they are just the most epic things to take just to smack down before you go out for your run. So you're getting a hit of caffeine. You're actually getting something a little bit more refreshing for when you wake up, and you don't have to go to the energy of making a coffee. So you can be caffeinated up out the door within like 10 minutes. Unless you're an old hack like me who has to do all sorts of stuff to warm himself up. But it takes the coffee-making element away.
That's a good point. Do you reckon you could also put it in like some sort of coffee mug and actually heat it up and then heat your milk and have like a hot one from it with it?
Well, I don't know. That's an interesting question. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Life hacks here.
I'm not sure whether they want you to do that.
No. But you could
at least give it a cold drip.
Yeah.
Pressed.
Moose, you should experiment, but what I've found them good for is, and I should post on social media, on our really hot days that we have here, rather than having a hot coffee, I put like 200 mils of the coffee in a cup with 200 mils of milk, put a scoop of ice cream, a couple of cubes of ice, and stir it. So ice coffee, very nice.
So you don't blend it all together, you just put it in the cup and just give it a stir.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. So that's what I've been using them for.
It didn't look real good on your...
Well, it's hard. Well, all it needed was maybe some whipped cream on top.
Yeah, or maybe. Look, I take your word for it that it tasted good.
Yeah.
They're also good to take to work, those quick cans as well. Like, you want a quick hit without, firing up a coffee machine, you're fine. The wide awake one. That's the best one. That's that. What's coming up? Shoe Geeks. That went out today to Patreon people. It's going everywhere on Sunday. Road to Nowhere crew. They're getting together next Tuesday to do an episode. Also a big 5K over in the US coming up. Sidious Mags putting it on in Texas. Ollie Hoare and Morgan McDonald are both in there. Super deep field. Being set up for Olympic qualifying times. So that's going to be something to keep your eye out if you're on social media over the weekend. Few little things come across my desk about this Olympic marathon opportunity to run qualifying times race. From what, were you in a meeting today, Moose? Because a few things come into me today. 7K course, Sydney. That's what I'm starting to hear. Can you get any news you can share?
Oh, there's no real news as such. Still nothing confirmed. Course still unconfirmed right now. There's nothing new, mate.
Nothing new. So that's why Jess Stenson, she didn't run Zatopek because she was focusing on that. I haven't heard, like Brett Robinson said on our live stream that he wasn't going to run it. So Jack didn't actually say he wasn't going to run it, Brad, but we kind of inferred that, didn't we, from the other races he said he was going to do.
Yeah, I think he was focusing on some of the shorter stuff, which, with the timeline, it didn't seem like those races would fit in with a marathon prep.
So it'd be interesting to see who rocks up, who doesn't rock up, and then how it kind of gets set up. So we'll keep trying to touch base the next couple of weeks on that one. Other than that, I think we're done. Brad, what are you doing between now and next week?
Actually, pretty quiet. I'm going to do a hill session tomorrow morning, probably in the rain. We've had a nice cool change come over the last couple of days, which is, amazing. That's pretty much me. Really boring week ahead.
Moose, what are you doing?
Same deal, just training. I got another 100-mile week to get through.
Have you got another race pegged out?
There's not a lot around. Like before Hobart Half.
I didn't know you were doing that. He told you that, Brad?
No.
I haven't heard.
Said that.
No, not on
the
show.
Oh, book flights for that.
Half. If you want a lesson on winning it, I'll give you some tips.
Fuck, I hope I run faster than what you ran.
Jeez, if you don't win, there's big pressure on. It wasn't about running fast times, it was about winning down there.
All right, I remember that. Hobart Half. I was going to do the bridge to bridge, but got a wedding on instead. So can't do that. Ali's going to go down and run that. Would have been good to have a hit out again because, yeah, I'm still short a few races.
When's Bridge to Bridge?
Feb 28.
Okay. So that's still a month away. So is that 5K that people are talking about? I know Jordan Williams said in his interview on the live stream thing that he was talking about maybe pacing it kind of thing. Is that
2 days after? I think that's a Box Hill
5K.
5K, yeah. So it looks really good. Deep field and fast times on the go. Should be fun to get involved with.
Yeah, some stuff coming up.
There's a few 5Ks like over the next month because New South Wales 5K is like next weekend.
Yes.
And then I think Victorian 5K is then the following Thursday. Then you've got the ACT 5K on the Saturday. And then you've got this Box Hill one as well. So there's plenty of opportunities on the East Coast for 5Ks.
Isn't
it? Like a parkrun.
Did get down there.
Yeah.
Which is a fast one near Geelong. That's quick, isn't it?
Nah, it's not quick at all.
Moose, you could do parkrun and then cross the line and then be the scan guy. So you could run, win it, and then volunteer.
I think you need to have some sort of qualification for that.
No, you don't.
No, yeah, I think you put your name down.
Oh, but I'm not involved.
You can't run and do the same thing, Brad, because I got in trouble once for doing that.
I'm not on the committee.
I was down as a volunteer, and then I ran, and then I scanned my barcode, and then I got an email saying you can't do both.
Oh, really?
It's a warning for you, yeah.
Really? You got a warning? By who?
Parkrun HQ. Ooh. No, I think it's like it's all automated that if you're in the results and you're on the volunteer sheet, you just get like this automated like email like, hang on. How does this work?
Oh, maybe it's because it means you're double dipping in points as well. You're getting maximum points for winning a park run, and then you're getting the volunteer points as well.
I don't know if I won it though. I can't remember why I did it. It was something like I remember thinking I can jog this and still do the job when I get back or something like that. Yeah, I can't remember, but I do.
There's a point system, Moose, in park run.
What happens if you get enough points?
It's not a point system. You just get a point every time you do something or you do a run.
No, I thought back in the day there was actually like in Canberra, like they kept track of like those points. So you got so many points for winning a park run and it.
No.
I'm sure there was something like that. I remember.
No, you just get
I'll find evidence between now and next week.
I never heard of this.
No, because you can click on your name and it just says like how many park runs you've done in total. And then it says where, like your fastest ones and where you've done it and your age grade.
No, I'm sure back in the day in Canberra, they had actually a point system. And then over the course of a year, it was whoever, there was basically, to see who was going to be like the park run champion for the year based on points.
Someone's just doing this independently. This is totally against what Parkrun does.
Yeah, okay.
I think so.
I'm sure it did happen in Canberra.
Some Canberra spreadsheet getting passed around. Some accountants putting in the numbers and sending around everyone afterwards. All right, fellas, we're done. Be back next week. Have an interview next week. Big name only coming on next week. See you, boys.
Have a good week.
All right, see ya.
Hope you enjoyed that episode. It was brought to you by Solution, the new faster clinically trialed treatment for shin splints that works while you're relaxing around the house after a run. Designed by athletes, clinically trialed by medical doctors, and with proven effectiveness, the Solution makes treating shin splints easy. Feel the difference in 30 days or get your money back. Interested? Well, go to solution.com/insiderunning. That's solution.com/insiderunning today. Thanks for tuning in. And thanks to Solution for sponsoring this week's episode.